Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Okay, all right, do you want to kick off?
Oh, I think we've already kicked off, haven't we? Have you got a drink in front of you?
I have.
Yeah? What do you got?
I have got Lagavulin that I was lucky enough to receive for Christmas.
Oh, look at you. Lucky you. I am running dry this evening.
Why's that?
Because as I was running to get to this recording, I looked in the fridge and there was no glass in there next to the keg, so I couldn't fill up my keg. I couldn't fill up a glass.
Yep. Fair enough.
Because I didn't want to keep you waiting any longer than I already did. So, Matt, Christmas has just come and gone.
Yeah, that was quick, wasn't it?
I guess so quick these days. Do you have a good Christmas, bro? Or Christmas?
I did, yeah. It was very nice, actually. So, it was quiet. It was just the four of us here at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice, yeah.
Yeah.
We went to see the lights last week as well. That was a fun outing.
Yeah, always is. We do that. There's a street around us that does it really, really well. And so we go there. Well, we've been down a few times already this year, but usually Christmas Eve, you go down there and you're bound to run into people you know, and the kids just have a ball. They block the street off and it just goes nuts. It was good. And then the weather was shit on Christmas, mind you.
Yeah.
But no, it was good. We had a nice quiet one to spend it on the water this year on the river, and it was nice.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. So I sent you a message. Was it yesterday? God, it's gone so quick. I can't even remember when I did. But just a screenshot of I think it was a tweet that I randomly came across, right?
Yeah.
I just want to get started on this one, right? And just to read it, it says, software development in 26 is going to require some loosening up a little. Code doesn't have to be as perfectly crafted as the way we did pre-AI. Call it slop if you want, but if you're still demanding perfection on every PR while your competitors are shipping slop in quotes, that works. You're fighting from a disadvantaged position. Shipping velocity matters more than perfection.
Yeah.
And that kind of, it's rubbed me the wrong way. And not many things do rub me the wrong way, but that kind of did. And after sending it to you, I keep thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out, why did it rub me the wrong way?
I mean, I can answer that question for you.
Yeah.
The answer is because it's intentionally crafted rage bait, deliberately designed to piss you off, and it has achieved that successfully.
Yeah. Okay. Job done.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it was. But the more I think about it, right, are we in any different position to where we were when we recorded the Nobody Gives a Fuck About Your Code episode?
No. It's exactly the same thing. And this is the thing, as annoying as it is, and as much as it's rubbed you the wrong way, he is 100% correct.
Well, he is. But I guess the point I'm trying to make here is the rage baity type, what he's trying to get you fired up for about the AI slop, it's not a new argument.
Yeah, correct.
It's an argument that we've been going through for the last, well, you and I, we've spoken about this countless times.
Yeah.
But it goes back to the old MVP days.
Yeah.
Build something, ship it fast, and get it tested and validated straight away. So as much as, yes, I don't like the idea of releasing AI slop, so to speak, that whole mindset, I think it just sounds like they're trying to jump on that bandwagon and get the clicks for it.
What do you mean?
Oh, like you said, it's the rage bait type. Let's just see how we can get some reactions out of this.
Yeah.
We're just regurgitating the same old stuff that we've had for so long, but we're putting a new flavor on it to see if we can get some more eyeballs, more likes, more engagement.
I mean, look, that's exactly what it is. I mean, look, here's the thing, right? I've said this before, but I've come to some conclusions about AI. In fact, no, I'll come back to that. But just to address what you're saying here, what we have said before is that nobody gives a fuck about your code, right? And it's not about shipping slop. It's not about demanding perfection. And I'll address that in a moment as well. But the point that is pertinent here is that in a competitive landscape, which we all are in, if you're agonizing over engineering perfection and your competitors are shipping and hoovering up customers, you're fucked. Now, granted, there is a world in which their solution, quote unquote, which is really just demos that get sold to investor after investor after investor, with, you know, dev teams jumping ship one after another.
Mm.
And, you know, when it's signed up a million customers that have all been sold on promises and dreams and, you know, nothing else, when it all falls in the toilet, your perfectly engineered solution could potentially be there to pick up the pieces. Or it could be that faith in the entire market has been destroyed, and now your perfectly engineered and crafted solution is anathema and no one's going to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And in, you know, 10 years, when anyone's interested in that technology again, if ever, well, it's too late because your business has folded.
Yeah, no, I do definitely agree with that. I was going to say, when you're talking about that, I'm like, maybe your business itself could be tarnished by that reputation of the others in the industry.
Yeah, happens. It does happen. Yeah,
it happens. But I was going to say, I think one thing that this is sort of sidestepping, completely ignores too, is what about the regulated and the industries that need their compliance levels and their security standards and everything all up to scratch, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, keep going.
And they can't afford to have slop when those businesses have their reputation and their accreditations and compliance and everything all gone through with a fine tooth comb.
Yeah.
And like one of my clients at the moment, we have enterprise customers, and absolutely we get put through the ringer by all of our enterprise customers about our security and our compliance and our development life cycle and all of our tooling and absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And if we drop the ball, then they don't purchase our product.
Yep, absolutely.
So how do I respond to these requests saying, oh, actually we just use AI slot through our application just to get it working because we need to stay in front of our competitors?
You don't, right?
Exactly. That's my point.
I think, first of all, you have to remember that this is rage bait and it worked, right?
Yeah.
This is a Liam gets angry about shit episode. Like, you have to understand the startup landscape, which is doomed, actually, anyway, because we said we weren't going to talk about it, but there's a post that I shared recently about JavaScript.
We weren't going to talk about it this time. We'll keep that one for next episode.
Okay. But look, all of these people, quote unquote, shipping AI slop in this startup culture, it's all these people that believe that they don't need devs anymore. They don't need engineers. They can just get AI. They can vibe code it, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're building is doomed. And like, it's a very different market and a different landscape to you and your regulated industry and your regulated product and your regulated customers. I do want to talk about that for a second. I just want to go on a tangent there. Because here's the thing, like I've said this before, like if you're a developer and you're worried about AI, you're using it wrong like not using it. I mean, like to anyone saying to me, how do we ensure that your code quality is meeting rigorous standards, blah, 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 blah. I will tell them that I use AI, and because I'm using AI, I'm actually shipping much higher quality code in higher volume.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just shipping slop. I'm not just rapidly iterating. I mean, I'm going to give you some examples later, but you know, I'm not just rapidly iterating, and shipping slop. I'm using AI to red team my work, and I'm also red teaming it as well. And this is why, you know, devs don't need to be worried. Like I look at the code that the AI generates, and it doesn't always work, frankly. Like, you know, that's one aspect of it. And I'll give you another real world example about that as well. But you know, even when it does work, I look at it and I see mistakes. I see architectural mistakes, I see tunnel vision errors, I see logical errors, I see all kinds of things that I have to call out and correct. And I'm just not worried. Like it's a really, really valuable tool. I mean, think about it this way, right? Let's say you're a carpenter and someone has invented the circular saw, right? If you are choosing not to use a circular saw and ship less, I don't think you get to necessarily say that everyone who's using a circular saw is being sloppy, because they might not be. They might just be using a tool that gets the job done faster. They're still the ones that are measuring and drawing out the lines and making the cuts and deciding what to keep and what to throw away.
Mm.
It's just a tool, and it's like any other tool. And, you know, we've gone through waves and we've gone through phases of thinking, is this a threat to our jobs? Is it not a threat to a job? And we go back and forth on it. I'm very firmly in that it's not a threat to our job camp at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a few reasons for that. I mean, the biggest one is what I've just described. And you know, as we've, and that's really the concrete of the abstract that we keep talking about, which is that our jobs, we're not code monkeys. I actually saw a video on this today, actually.
Yeah.
And there was a guy saying that anyone who thinks that AI is going to replace devs doesn't understand what developers do. And this video, and I can't remember what it was, and maybe I'll find it and we can share a link to it. But the guy in this video was saying that senior devs have been saying for years, decades, right? The language, the syntax, writing the code is not the hard part of the job. And the things that AI is good at is because it knows everything about everything in a way that humans never can. Like, it knows every language. It can write code in any language for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like senior devs would expect you to be able to understand computer science at a fundamental level and very quickly pick up any language, you know, the grammar, the syntax, the idioms, whatever, and just start churning out code eventually. Not as quick as AI. AI can do it better. But what you're bringing to the table is not the code and never has been. Like, that's the small part of your job.
Yep.
You still need to architect the solution. Like, this is the thing, is I know you're on the tools less these days, but even as a developer where you're full time, you know, on the tools, what percentage of your time do you spend actually writing code?
I'd say, like, it's still in the majority, but not,
I would disagree,
not the entirety.
I think that it's 50%.
I would have thought maybe a bit higher than 50
at its maximum.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe that's me.
Everyone's circumstances are different, right?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to sit and think a lot and draw and diagram and what have you, and plus, you know, there's everything else we do, the consulting side as well, the domain modeling and everything else, right?
Yeah.
And you know what, AI can help with that too. It can't do it, but it can help with it. So if I can offload a big chunk of the code writing work to AI and get more done, I do. But this is the thing, is you know, the difference is between myself and someone who is a wannabe startup founder, and don't get me wrong, I am a wannabe startup founder, but someone who's a non-technical wannabe startup founder who has an idea, $1 million idea, $1 billion idea, and now they don't need anyone else because they can get AI to build it for them and then they can sell it, right?
Mm.
The difference is I'm looking at what's being built and what code is coming through, and I'm seeing problems and I'm fixing them. And I'll give you a real example, and this is, I'm going to go off on a mini rant about something else because I want to rant about something else as well.
Yeah.
We're now, what, Tuesday of second week of this 2 week break, right?
Yep.
I've spent this week working on a side project that I've been wanting to get off the ground for about a year or so. And I have been, it's not that I haven't written a single line of code. I have been writing as little code as possible because I've been trying to test and iterate and, you know, figure out the logic and everything else. So I've been pretty much using ChatGPT to do my architectural rubber ducking and help me generate documentation and issues. And I've been then funneling those into GitHub and getting Copilot to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
I have spent a week fighting it.
Yep.
Today, I didn't use AI at all until, I used AI, I used Copilot in Visual Studio to fix one issue and Copilot in GitHub to fix another. But that's because by the time I got to that, it was monkey work and I just could not be bothered, right?
Yeah,
so I just gave it very explicit instructions and just like went off and do that, fix this. And even then, it came back with a PR and I had to say, what about this? We should change this. And of course, it came back and changed it. And it's like, oh yeah, I dropped the fucking ball there. How it said it, right? But after a week of fighting this and basically, so what I'm building is an AI product, right? And the point that I am at now is very, very basic rag, right? I was just trying to get to that position, like literally the jumping board, right? The starting off, the springboard, the starting point. It's taken me over a week to get there because I've been fighting the tooling and I've been fighting the AI. So today I wrote the code myself. I didn't use AI at all. And I got after a week of not getting anywhere, I got to the point where it's now working. Like, you know, I don't have the product done yet, but I'm now at the point where I can actually start it.
Yeah.
And that annoyed me a bit. And it's not all the fault of AI. It's the fault of the tooling as well. Aspire is basically useless and Foundry is basically useless. And I know those are controversial statements to make and they are unqualified and they're not fair without qualification, but I'm not going to qualify them now because I'm already tired just thinking about everything I've been fighting with them this week. And I'm going to let you come back before I decide to address those.
I was just going to say, maybe that's another topic we can throw down down the track. Just to move away from the AI focus, we can maybe do a bit of a dive into Aspire and where they're at the moment.
We can do. But there is also a reason why I mentioned that, right? In terms of the AI story, and in particular Foundry. Like Aspire, like the problems with Aspire are the same problems in general, right? So here's the other thing. This is a conclusion that I've come to over probably the past year of work. Everyone wants to capitalize on AI.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to, you know, have the next big AI startup and the AI revolution. We've mentioned this before that, you know, we were talking about, is it the next crypto? Is it the next IoT?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I think about it, the more I think it's close as that. Now, there are some use cases. There are some niche use cases. There are some enterprise projects that I've worked on over the past 2 years using AI, and they are very valid use cases, and they are definitely making a difference. There are several other projects I've worked on where it has been a case of the client doesn't want to miss the AI bandwagon.
Yep.
And they're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, and many of them won't. Now, the big thing about AI in my view is that, and I've said this before and I'll elaborate on it a bit now, I think that AI is going to prove to be a much more valuable tool for individuals than it will be for enterprises.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's currently trying to, you know, well, look, everyone's trying to come up with the next great AI product, whether that is consumer focused, whether it's enterprise focused, so on and so forth. Now, the enterprise tooling, the enterprise platforms are shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just me that says that, right? So if you want to use Azure, OpenAI, Anthropic, whatever, right? You can build some AI products with them. There are also very specialized focused AI products out there on the market, things like the voice synthesis stuff, the 3D modeling stuff, all kinds of other things that are very, very highly specialized. And they're very good. And they're built on, I mean, we don't know what they're built like internally. God knows, maybe we'd never want to look at that, right?
Yeah.
But the enterprise tooling, the tooling that is there for, you can use this to build your enterprise products internally in your enterprise or what have you, it's garbage. And I shouldn't say this because maybe I have to find a way of rephrasing this because it's also not fair, but it is garbage. Like, you look at the docs, it doesn't work, right? It doesn't do anything beyond a basic demo. There are no samples or documentations beyond basic demos. Everyone's falling over themselves to not fall behind on this. So, you know, nothing works for more than a day anyway before mm-hmm. you have to rebuild it from scratch. All of the guidance and enterprise, you know, direction they're giving you is wrong. Like, it doesn't work the way that they want you to use it. It works the way that it's worked since day one, just better than it did at day one.
Yeah.
But the way that it works, there's no ways of using AI that are better now than there were 2-3 years ago, like from a platform perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's another thing that has annoyed me, is that I've spent a week fighting that, and I've spent a year fighting that and trying to get things to work. And all of the things that I've done where I've tried to use these AI platforms would have been much better if I'd have just used like OpenAI and hit the REST API directly and, you know, and not tried to use a platform, just built my own thing around it. And again, that's what I did today, and suddenly everything worked. So yeah, I'm a bit annoyed about all that. And then, sorry, I kind of just spitting random things here. But just the last thing I was going to say around like the whole enterprise AI thing, and you know, just tying back into why I don't think we're at risk, is another thing that everyone's trying to do at the moment is come up with the agent marketplace.
Because
everyone thinks that agentic AI is a thing and that agents are a thing and going to be the next big thing. And I don't think people understand what agents are and how they work and how we're going to use them, right? And MCP, and like I'm going to touch on all these things, right? So we're all being told MCP is how you get agents to interact with your data and your systems, right?
Yep.
But MCP is the worst way to do it. MCP is the best way to do it if you are making something that you're exposing for other people to consume publicly. But for enterprise and for internal and for giving agents access to your tools, your enterprise tools, there are much better ways of doing it that work much better. So that's a whole wasted bunch of effort there, right? But then everyone's talking about agents and people want to be able to create agents that they can sell or rent, or, you know, instead of having a SaaS, have like an agentic solution and blah, 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 blah. It's just not going to work. It's never going to work. And here's why, right? How the heck are you going to make an agent and sell an agent that, when you think about what agents are, which is they're very highly specialized tools that do one thing, unless you've got something that agent can do that no one else has, what are you going to do? So what's going to happen now is, of course, I don't think that this agent marketplace thing is going to take off. People are going to try. What's going to happen next is that people are going to start trying to sell MCP tools, right? So people are going to rapidly, and they'll probably use AI to do it. They're going to start looking at all of the API specs for all of these products that are out there. And they're going to start building MCP servers and maybe agents as well. But the real value is going to be in the MCP. And it's going to be like, we'll sell you this as a layer that you can plug in and run as a module. And it will sit on top of, let's say you're running Liam ERP 2000. Well, I've written an MCP server for Liam ERP 2000, so you can run this in your enterprise, and now all of your AI has access to Liam ERP and has all that capability. And people are going to start doing this for everything, whether it's the Microsoft Graph API, whether it's SAP, name your enterprise product, HubSpot, Salesforce, YouTube, whatever, right? But here's the thing. Look what happened back in, 2010 to 2012, when people started talking about the API economy and data being the new currency and all this sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So pretty much everyone had an API back then, and pretty much everyone's API was open and available, right? You had to have an account, you had to be a user. But the example I'll give will be Facebook, because this one annoys me. So Facebook had an API. They still do, but it's restricted now, heavily, heavily restricted. But Facebook used to have an API. And using this API, you could hook into Facebook and authenticate and get access to anything that user has access to.
Yep.
So what Windows Phone did with Facebook and Twitter and everything else, and LinkedIn was they had a social feed built into the OS, and it was glorious. It was amazing. It was so good, right? So you could, using Windows Phone, I don't know if you ever used it, but you could just go to your social feed and it would show you all your updates. It was your timeline, because this was pre-algorithm, where it was literally just a chronological timeline of all your updates from all your different things all aggregated in one place. That was amazing, right? But it wasn't just Windows Phone doing this. It was third-party apps and so on and so forth. And that meant you weren't going to Facebook or using the Facebook app, and that meant you were no longer seeing ads.
Yeah.
So Facebook shut down that API, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Reddit, more recently, Reddit lasted until a year or two ago, and then they made changes. And there was a whole protest on Reddit, because there are third party Reddit clients, and Reddit just basically tried to shut those down. It's like, no, you can't do that anymore. We're closing the API. And of course, that's what's going to happen. It's like, you know, all of these companies, like Liam, ERP 3000, they want you to pay more for the agentic license that you add on to, just like Microsoft, right? Copilot.
Oh, absolutely.
Copilot is not part of Microsoft 365. You have to pay extra for it,
yeah,
right? And all these other, you know, Liam ERP 3000, Salesforce, SAP, all the other things I mentioned, they want you to pay for the agent license. So if they're finding that there's anyone out there that is, you know, using their API and using it to create an MCP, they're going to shut it down. And then what does that do to all the other integrations? It's like, no, we're ending integrations. You have to use our MCP server to integrate now.
Yeah. And I mean, I see where you're going with that. But I see that as, if I'm starting a business that's in that space, like that agentic marketplace or the MCP marketplace that you're speaking of, it's a fragile ecosystem. Basically for the reasons that you're talking about. But, you know, there are parallels to that, even outside of the API discussion, right?
Yeah.
You know, people saying using the App Store as their distribution method for games or whatever else.
Yeah.
Right. You can get demonetized or delisted, or the algorithm cannot look after you. And all of a sudden your revenue will go from millions a month down to tens of dollars, kind of thing.
Yep.
Because you're relying on someone else's platform as your distribution method.
Yeah.
And right, this argument's been around for a long time. That's not specific to this new potential marketplace that you're speaking of.
No, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I wanted to jump in a lot earlier, but I thought I'd let you finish going where you were going. But you're talking a bit.
I do that sometimes.
Yeah, talking a bit without taking a breath.
Yeah.
Talking a bit about the usage of, or using the AI tools to just help you write better code, or to red team and whatnot, or to be a bit more efficient,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. Are you trying to tell me that you're of the belief that there is this concept that AI will make you a 10 times developer?
Well, it kind of already has, but am I of the belief that it should have to? No, I think you know very well that I don't think that.
Sorry, the reason why I was dragging that out and trying to figure out how to tie that in is because you do have a post that you put up just before Christmas too.
I do, yeah.
Titled, AI wasn't supposed to make us 10 times workers.
Yeah, yeah. So look, I just want to give some context here. So first of all, how do I phrase this? Like, I am using AI to make me much more efficient and productive than I was, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that annoys me is the expectation that now that AI is here, unless you are delivering 10 times the output that you were 4 years ago, you're out of a job. Makes me quite angry.
Yes, but that comes from, I guess, the Silicon Valley hustle culture, right?
I mean, what sort of asshole would write a blog post saying that you have to get your head in the game and be a 10x worker, not just developers, because of AI?
Yeah, just try. I missed that article, but I can only imagine who it was.
Oh, do you not know who it was?
No. Huh?
Did you not read my post? Because I do say specifically.
I did read your post. Trust me, I did read it, and I've got it up now.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to.
Third paragraph. I recently read a blog post.
I didn't click the link. That's what I didn't do.
Well,
oh, yeah, I've seen it now.
Yeah.
I've seen it now.
I should also let you know that I did send him a test, please, of this. So we are talking about Ulysses McLaren, friend of the show, AI expert extraordinaire.
Yeah, we've had him on a couple of times.
We have, yeah. And look, in fairness, you know, he was making a very specific point, and I don't think he made it well, but he did make a lot of other points very well that I did agree with. I mean, look, he talks a lot about what you started with here. The mess is expected. AI-driven work often looks messy. Half-finished scripts, rough prototypes, tools that work just well enough, experiments that never ship. That's not inefficiency, it's learning. The cost of experimentation has dropped. The cost of waiting has increased. Even technical debt means less than it used to, because tools improve fast and cleanup is cheaper than it once was. Not experimenting is now the riskier choice. His wording and phrasing aside, which isn't all bad there anyway. I 100% agree with that. And we've spoken about that before as well. Like I've spoken
agree
about
with most of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the refactoring part's still arguable.
But like you said, that's not a new problem, right? Like we've spoken about people shipping prototypes and rubber stamping it. Like it's
I'm arguing that you just said in that the idea of tech debt is not as bad because refactoring is a lot easier these days.
Yes.
And I'd argue that I don't think it is.
I disagree. Like something that I've said on a previous episode is that the number of issues that have closed on a bunch of my repos now because they're just tech debt that I've logged an issue for and haven't bothered fixing because I've had no need to and I haven't had the time. It hasn't been high enough priority and I've just assigned those to GitHub to Copilot and it's fixed them.
So I guess, to me, that's the cheap tech debt.
Oh yeah, 100%. Right. Absolutely.
But that's not the stuff that's deteriorating your code base.
No, that's true. Yeah.
The stuff that is hard to refactor, the stuff that is actually slowing your code base down, slowing down your productivity, is the stuff that is not easy to refactor. It's the stuff that's not easy to tweak your domain model, or I'm just trying to think of the phrase that they use in the DDD books, but to adjust your domain model as new ideas and new concepts are found, to change some fundamental architectural decisions that were made early on based on a lack of knowledge or a lack of requirements, right? These things, they're the critical tech debt that I see. And those things are really hard to refactor, and AI is not going to help you in those instances.
I'm finding AI is helping me immensely with those. And granted, it's a contrived situation because I'm just iterating faster. But what I'm finding now is that when I'm building and I'm building very quickly with AI, I'm producing a record number of ADRs. Like I document everything. Every decision is captured. Even the minor ones, everything, every architectural decision, everything, right? And then when it comes to refactor, it's much easier to see why something was done, why it no longer works, and what's going to fix it. I mean, granted, like, as I said, it's kind of contrived because I am cutting corners in ways that I wouldn't have before, because I would have known that I would have had to have invested more time into making those architectural decisions early, because I would know that the inertia, you know, changing that decision later is going to be much, much heavier. Mm. Whereas now it's not. So I am encountering that more often because I am making those decisions more quote unquote sloppily, you might say, you know, in fairness, sure. But yeah, like I'm finding that the way that I'm using AI is empowering me to use AI better in the future as well. Now, granted, you know, when you talk about your 10-year-old code base and all that tech debt, yes, that is going to be hard. But I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm still finding AI is useful in cleaning those things up, in help. But I mean, look, here's the problem, right? I would not be able to go to a repo that has this tech debt, that has one of these major architectural issues, and say, fix this and, you know, assign it to Copilot and be done with it. That's never going to work.
Yeah.
Like, you do need still do a deep dive and give it direction and iterate and give it feedback and correct it and bring it back on track. You know, there's no getting away from that. So my point being, I guess, I don't think our jobs are at risk. And just to get back to the AI slop thing, I mean, so I'll give you another example. My mum's a copywriter. I'm sure I've brought this up before, right? And she's said that the work for copywriters is drying up because people are just using ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
But ChatGPT generated copy is ChatGPT generated copy. And it's very easy to spot.
Yep.
Right. The problem is the companies that want professional copy and, you know, copy that's written by a professional copywriter that's of enterprise quality are few and far between. And that's no different now. I mean, before it was AI, it was the marketing intern, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was someone would just churn out any crap because people that don't understand good writing and don't understand the impact of poor writing that it's going to have on their potential customers. And, you know, in fairness, most people probably don't care anyway. Like, you know, there is a bar of professionalism that you're either above or below, and it is easy to spot. And some people are going to be put off by it and others aren't.
Yeah.
AI hasn't changed that. It just means that they don't need to get the intern to do it anymore.
Which goes back to that discussion around, and we've had this before too. If you don't need the intern to do that, then why do you need the intern? And if you don't need the intern, then where is the next generation of copywriters, marketers, developers coming from?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other discussion, but AI marketing, not in the sense of the episode that we did on AI marketing, which was marketing for AI, but using AI to do the marketing. It'd be very interesting discussion to have with someone in the marketing space about how AI is changing their career, I guess. Because again, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are using AI to generate content and do social posts and all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's why you're seeing a lot of people pop up on your feed now that you never would have seen before. And do they care that the content they're churning out is shit?
No.
They never have, because the algorithm rewards volume and always has.
But it doesn't always have to.
I agree.
It won't, because there is so much noise in the system now.
Yeah.
They're going to have to change the algorithms to make sure that the signal gets amplified a lot better.
I don't know if I agree. I don't think anything is going to change. I think that what's going to happen is that the algorithm is going to continue surfacing shit, but that's no different to how it's always been. Like, to give you an analogy, and I think we brought this up before, is like, let's say you're a furniture maker, right? You do handcrafted furniture.
Yeah.
Right. And IKEA suddenly comes along, right? And you have this discussion and you say, why would people pay me $6,000 to build them a table when they can go to IKEA and buy one for $600?
Yep.
And they can go in and walk out with it, whereas I'm going to make them wait 4 to 6 weeks, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. The argument is that there are always going to be people that want the quality, that can recognize the handcrafted difference and so on and so forth, or what mm-hmm. have you. But it's not true. Like, I mean, well, okay, it is true. There are going to be people that want that quality, and there are people that can tell the difference. But the vast majority of people can't tell the difference, right?
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people don't care. Like, they just want it cheap and they want it now.
No. Right?
Hang on. Now, the thing is if you use that as an analogy for the algorithm, those people that do want that handcrafted, that quality, they need to know where to go to look for it. And if we're talking about, again, quote unquote, bunny is the algorithm, it's the same thing. People that want the quality are going to need to know where to go for it. And you know what? Like, I think about the apps that I used to use and would scroll a feed and look at things, and I don't anymore. It's like, I'll open it and I'll scroll for about 5 seconds and there's nothing there. It's all shit. So I don't bother. Like, I know the people that I follow and the people that I'm interested in, and I just go directly to the sources now. And if I see recommendations for other things or other people or other links or places that they tell me where to go, I'd follow them and look into it.
Yep.
But I'm not using the algorithm as my source for discovering quality content.
No, I get that. No, I do agree with that. And I think what I was going to add to that is, maybe it's not the algorithm that we'll end up tweaking, but it's people's behavior.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. As an input into that algorithm, people will start to just skim over the slop that's out there, which then the algorithm will recognize and then deprioritize a lot of that slop.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. Yeah.
You mentioned something just now too that just can't remember what it was now. Can't remember. All this AI talk is frying my brain.
Well, let's touch on this blog post then.
I wanted to go back to that, because I don't think we've covered at all the point you're trying to make in that post.
No, we haven't at all,
and
I think.
You touched on it to start with, in that you do believe that AI has made you more productive.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you can pick it up from here if you want.
So I did say AI has made me more productive, and I do like that, right? But what I don't like is the expectation that I now have to deliver 10 times the output, and that's now the baseline. And the thing that annoys me is I'll quote directly from this article, from this post, right? Let me find the we're so caught up in the race to capitalize on this new technology that we rarely pause to ask whether we're even asking the right questions. When I took a step back and thought about it, I realized this isn't what I want from AI. AI wasn't supposed to make us 10x workers. It was supposed to make us 0.1x workers.
Yeah, and I agree, and I like that. And I think you mentioned, or you linked to a tweet or a post in there too.
Yeah, it's a well-known tweet by this point, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, the one that sort of says basically, what was it? I don't want AI to be doing my creative artistic work while I'm stuck there doing the laundry and the dishes. I want the AI to be doing the laundry and the dishes while I'm there doing the creative work.
Yeah, that's it. 100%.
But I think sort of part of the point you're coming to too, sort of, as I said earlier, like, it's that hustle culture that's come out of Silicon Valley, right? moment where you have, if you're not working 80 hours a week, then you're not going to make it, right? Yeah. You're not worth it. Get out of town, like find somewhere else to work, because you need to be at your desk for 80 hours a week, and you have to be in the office, and you have to be pretending to be productive, making it look like you're actually doing something because you're sitting at your desk, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That doesn't really fly around here. And if that's the case, then, you know, I agree with you. Like, and maybe it's not the 0.1%. Maybe it's just to wind it back a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's actually what I say here at the end of this post, right? That's exactly what I say. It's like, I'm not saying that we should do that. I'm not saying, so here's my final thought. When I say we should give some of that time back, I don't just mean as leaders or employees. I mean to ourselves as well. If AI lets you 10x your productivity, great. Consider 5xing it instead. Take the other half and invest it where it actually matters. Your health, your family, your relationships, your sense of meaning.
Yeah.
And even then, like, even then, you know. But here's the thing. And I speak about, I've spoken about this in the post as well, about, you know, the first three industrial revolutions that you think we'd learn from, right? When the mechanical weaving loom was invented, right? And I don't know how many rugs that meant that you could make in a day, and instead of one rug per 4 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't mean that all of the weavers started, you know, only working one day a month.
No.
It meant that many of them became unemployed, and the rest of them just had to up their volume. And that's, I guess that's what bothered me about Yuli's post, is that it's 19th century, 17th century thinking, 18th century, I don't know. It's industrial revolution thinking. And that bothers me a bit. And I don't know how, when, or if that's going to change. It's the same thing with everything, like any kind of automation. It's like, you'd think that if something comes along that means that your job can be done in 1/10 of the time, you would get 9/10 of your time back. But no, that's not how it works. That's not how the world works.
Because we live in a capitalist society.
Well, yes, that's right. But the only way, even like in principle, that can work is if you invent something yourself and you don't tell anyone and you don't share it, right? And look, there are people that have done this. There was that guy. What was the? I think it was a software developer, actually, and he found someone in China to just do his job for him on Fiverr.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and no one had any problem with the work that was getting done, or the quality, or the timeliness, or anything. It was when he got found out that it was considered unethical, and I'm not saying it wasn't, right? But I'm just saying, you know, arguably the guy found an efficient method to get his job done in a fraction of the time at no extra cost to his employer. What's the problem?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not taking that position there, but I'm saying, like, hypothetically, like, so if I had invented GitHub Copilot, right, and I didn't tell anyone, and I was the only person using it, and I was 10xing my work and, you know, taking 9/10 of my week off,
yeah,
that's the only way that would ever work. Now, of course, in reality, people don't do that because they then want to find more, right? Because that's the other thing about our capitalist society, right? Is we just don't value our time enough. Like, people don't want to get their time back. They want to use the same amount of time and just get more money and more work. But again, I don't think that's really fundamentally what we actually want. I think that's what we're conditioned to believe that we want as a consequence of that hustle culture you were talking about.
Yeah, I think it's all tightly connected. And it reminds me of a story or a parable where there's like this guy that's living in, I think it goes like, the guy's living on South America somewhere, right? On the coast in the South America.
Oh, yeah.
And he spends his days fishing. He's out on his little boat, just fishing, doing everything, because that's what he loves doing. And that's all he wants to do. And he's just loving life.
Yeah.
And this banker from the States who's stressed all the time, and he's just all, you know, makes millions of dollars a year, completely stressed, needs to have a break. And he thinks, what am I going to do? You know what? I want to go fishing. So he goes down to South America to this lonely village, finds this guy that's out there enjoying his life, and the banker goes and spends a week with him and spends all the time out on the boat and just relaxes, and he's like, this is the life, this is awesome. And then he starts talking to the fisherman. He's like, you know, you've got a good thing going here, maybe we could look at turning this into a tourist operation. I mean, I've got heaps of mates, they'll pay tens of thousands of dollars to come down here and have a week fishing with you. And then once you do that, and then the fisherman's like, yeah, okay, but then what? And the banker goes, well, then you can reinvest that money and you can get another boat and you can get employees and we can start to scale it. And the fisherman's like, yeah, and then what do we do? He goes, well, then you're just you can grow it and you can branch out to other regions and you can start to grow this business to get it to, you know, to be turning over millions and millions of dollars a year. The fisherman's like, yeah, and then what? The banker's like, well, then you can sell it for $100 million. He goes like, yeah, And what do I do with that money? And the bank was like, you could go find somewhere nice and quiet and buy yourself a fishing boat and, and go out fishing all day, every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's that same mindset.
Yeah.
Like push, 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 but for what?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. It's just the way you were talking there just reminded me of that little story.
Yeah, and it's absolutely right. And I think the thing that frustrates me is, you know, I do work a lot. I am a workaholic. And I, you know, I don't know if I work 80 hours a week. Some weeks I probably do. Some weeks I probably do no more than my employed paid hours. But the thing that annoys me, it's not that I don't want to do it. Like if I didn't have a job, if I didn't have to work, I would do what I do, right? And I do. Like in my spare time, I do the more or less the same thing because I enjoy it, but I don't want to have to do it. I don't know. I guess I see time as our most precious resource. It's the ultimate non-renewable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just wish we had more of it. And I wish that discovering or creating tools that made us more efficient, that made the work that we do take less time, meant that time saved was time that was given back to us. But that's not the way it works. And that's frustrating. And that, again, is maybe one thing we can do is think about how we measure value, right? And we've spoken about this before. We know it's hard, right? So as consultants, what we effectively do is we sell hours, right?
Yep.
So we trade dollars for hours. Mm-hmm. So the only way that we can make more money is by giving more hours.
Or charging more.
Yeah.
But it's a supply now, and demand scenario
it,
then.
Sorry?
Supply and demand scenario. If the demand dries up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I mean, just thinking about what are some other metrics that we've tried in the past, like lines of code, right? That's obviously, that's obviously nonsense. I don't know. What if we started defining value in milestones or deliverables? The problem with that is that's how you end up with it, right back to the quote that you mentioned, the screenshot that you spoke about at the very start of this episode, is once we start adjusting to that culture, that's when we start getting slop.
Well, 2 points on that. One, what you're talking about there is fixed price contract.
Not necessarily. No, in fact, not at all. No.
No.
Let's call it fixed price sprints.
It's fixed price.
Fixed price. Fixed price.
Yeah,
iterations.
Fixed price deliverable. But fixed price deliverable, yes. Which is effectively a fixed price, smaller fixed price contract. But
a fixed price micro contract.
Yeah. Right? If that's how we want to go. But then this always comes down to the concept that what gets measured gets managed.
Yeah.
And basically, human nature will be whatever you are charging for will get manipulated and gamified.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As you said there, if it's the features, then they're going to come out sloppy and they're going to come out and do only what that feature is designed to do.
Well, I mean, look, hang on. Like, that doesn't really change the game because right now someone can go to developer A using, you know, using dollars for hours, right? Because we all still do the same thing, right? We do the estimates and we say, this is how long we think it's going to take. And therefore, this is how much we think it's going to cost, right? So they're still going to go to, you know, six different developers, and one's going to come in at 10 times the price of the other, and they're probably going to land somewhere in the middle because they're going to think this guy's way too expensive, this guy's suspiciously cheap.
Yep.
And they're going to land somewhere in the middle. Now, if we're charging based on feature, it's still going to be the same thing. Like, we're going to think, how much is this, how long is it going to take me to do this, and therefore how valuable is it because I'm valuing based on my time? Or you might think, how innovative is this solution, how hard is it going to be? I don't know, like, you know, we might think about it a different way, but the point is there's going to be someone who's going to come along and they're going to think, I can undercut everyone else here and I can do this for $100.
Yep.
And everyone else is going to charge $3,000 for this.
Yep.
And that means that I can 50% do a half-assed job and 50% get, you know, AI slop to do the rest without checking it properly, and I'll deliver it. And again, unless there's, well, like you said, a way of measuring the outcome, unless there's a fixed way of validating that what's been delivered is of sufficient quality, that's what's going to happen. But I guess
you
get it now, yeah.
And I mean, like, that, this keeps reminding me, or keeps making me think back, like, the construction industry are in a similar situation.
Yeah.
Right? And I always think back to when we signed a contract to do our house renovations, and the builders were pretty much, right, if you sign on this dotted line, this is how much it's going to cost, but here is our scope of work, and anything that is not in that scope of work, like, we're building to that scope of work.
Yeah.
And if things change, then you're paying for it.
Yeah.
So I remember them saying, like, you need to read through with a fine tooth comb that scope of work, because right now, if it's not right, you need to flag that now so we can readjust.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, that worked. But then, like, to take that analogy further too, it's like, that's a fixed price contract with what do you call it? Variation. So we were able to put variations in as we needed to, because obviously there's always going to be scope creep. But like, to carry that analogy further, there are builders in the industry that will undercut.
Yeah.
There are builders in the industry that will cut corners.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think we're unique in that space either, I guess is the point I'm making there.
No, I agree. Yeah.
And then, so then the only other way is if you're not doing that, then you're selling product.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not going, if you're going to move away from trading time for money, time for dollars, I guess you're trading time, dollars for product.
I don't know. I mean, I think, well, I don't disagree with any of that. I guess I wonder, does that mean that for literally everyone else, because not everyone's in product, right? Does that mean that we are doomed to continually up output? I mean, this is the thing. It's like, look, I did say that this is the fourth industrial revolution, not first. And, you know, it's the 21st century, not the 19th century. And, you know, and I don't know. I don't think we're there. I don't think things are going to be different this time around, but will they eventually? Because some things are different. Like we're talking about UBI. We're talking about a post-scarcity era. We're talking about all kinds of things that I don't know. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're close to them. But maybe by the time we get to the fifth or sixth or seventh industrial revolution, and you know, there's a population of maybe 200,000 people left in the world. I don't know. Yeah. Things will be different that time around.
Who knows? Who knows?
Keeping you awake.
Yep, absolutely. It's well past my bedtime, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, same.
You got plans for New Year's?
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed early.
Yeah, I keep saying that. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to make the 9 o'clock firework.
Yeah. No, so for the past, I don't know how many years, because obviously like when we were young nippers, we would go out for New Year. We would go out and go to a party or go to a bar. I haven't done that for a long time. It's not worth it, right? But you know, like a party or something. The last thing we did, I'm pretty sure the last thing we did was we went to the park down at Balmain. I can't remember what it's called. There's massive crowds there and people out with their picnic blankets and everyone's having a drink and there's lots of music and stuff and this great view of the fireworks. I'm pretty sure that was the last thing we did when we went out for New Year, like out for New Year's.
Yeah.
What we've been doing since then, which I guess actually 1 year since that one, we went to New Zealand. So we would have been in New Zealand, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, we've been doing, we pick like a movie trilogy or something and we do a marathon of that. And that's our New Year tradition.
Fun. So what's on tomorrow?
I don't know. So the first time we did it, we did Lord of the Rings. Like we did the Lord of the Rings extended cut.
Yeah.
Since then, we've done Back to the Future, Indiana Jones. I don't know if we've done Star Wars. We might do Star Wars. I don't know. I can't remember. But like, yeah, again, like since having the kids, it's no longer a back-to-back movie marathon. It's a watch part of one movie and then watch another part of it a bit later on, watch some of it the next day. And
yeah, no, I get it.
Oh. Yeah. How about you? Just in bed early?
In bed early.
Yeah.
No, we've got a friend whose birthday is actually tomorrow night. Right. New Year's Eve. It's her birthday. So we're going around there, but going to be home early.
Yeah.
Partly because the excuse I think we're going to be using is just to make sure that we're home for the dog.
Oh, yeah. That's
so when the fireworks and all that go off, she's not losing her shit. But also the other reason being I can't stay up too late these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Speaking of not staying up too late.
Yeah. We're keeping the bar staff up. They're calling last orders.
That's it. So I think that's it for this episode of the Beer Driven Devs. I'm Liam Elliott.
I'm Matt Goldman.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
How can I rephrase that so that we can keep it in the episode and it's not career suicide?